Hi, it's Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Overcome Under-Earning and Find Your Worth. It's an interview with Barbara Stanny. Barbara Stanny's dad is the R in H&R Block. Still, she was never given any advice about money when she was growing up because making and managing money was a man's job. So she married a lawyer and lived a nice life and went to the ATM one day and was stunned to see insufficient funds come across the screen. Her husband had gambled away everything, leaving the country and her with more than $1 million in debt. Worse, her dad wouldn't help her out. Thankfully, Barbara was working as a writer at the time and was asked to interview successful women in business. This assignment changed her life by guiding her to financial success, and now she's helping other women discover that path too. And in this audio interview, you'll hear her amazing journey back from devastation and all the financial steps she took to get there. You'll also hear the biggest way most women sabotage their success and how to stop yourself from doing it. You'll hear exactly what an under-earner is. Believe it or not, it has nothing to do with how much you make and the five steps you can take to overcome it. You'll hear a three-second exercise that will help you pinpoint the psychological root of your money issues. You'll hear how to shut up that little voice inside your head that says things like, I can't do this, or I'm not worth it. And the one thing all successful women have in common that sparked their self-confidence. You'll hear why it's so important for women to surround themselves with support instead of naysayers, and how to start training yourself to do that. You'll hear the four critical rules to respecting and appreciating money and why that's so important in the process of success. You'll learn about the paradox women in business usually struggle with and how to integrate what Barbara calls a profit motive mindset in your life for powerful results. Look, Barbara says there are three levels to financial success. There's survival, stability, and affluence. But in order to move up the levels, women need to stop sabotaging themselves. Under-earners play the game not to lose, while high-earners play the game to win. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how to start training yourself to win. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Sinoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Today we're talking with Barbara Stanny. Barbara, great to have you with us today.
I am really happy to be here. Thank you.
So you are a woman on a mission. And I got to say, first, I mean, your history is so interesting. The daughter of H&R Block, a psychologist, an author on women that make six-figure incomes. But you're a woman on a mission to inspire women to become financially empowered.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. If anyone had told me 20 years ago that I would be empowering women financially, I would have told them they were crazy. Because for the first 40-some years of my life, I did not understand money. My eyes would glaze over. My brain would fog up. I just didn't want anything to do with money. I just wanted to spend it.
Wait, I got to stop you there. How does that work? The daughter of the H&R Block guy, right?
That's right. Richard, the R.
How does that work? You'd think you'd be doing the money thing, you know, in the playpen.
The only advice my father ever gave me about money was don't worry, because under that was the unspoken assumption there'll always be a man to take care of you. He was very clear, making and managing money is a man's job. I am to stay home and raise the kids. Well, I thought that was great, and I married a man who was a lawyer, then he went to work for H&R Block, and then he became a financial advisor, a stockbroker, and even got his real estate license. But what I found out very early in our marriage is that he was a compulsive gambler. And I find out every year, a couple times a year, that he had gambled my inheritance. And you want to hear something crazy? I continued to let him manage the money because that's how intimidated I was, terrified by anything to do with finances.
That makes sense, though. You've been told that. Don't worry about it.
Right?
Yeah.
And a lot of women are in the shoes I was in. But I have this theory, and many of your listeners will understand what I'm saying. If you don't deal with your money, your money will deal with you. And what happened is one day, after 15 years of marriage, I went to the ATM to get out something like $60. And that's when the little screen said, sorry, no money. Well, Well, I didn't say sorry, no money. It says insufficient funds, but I much preferred sorry, no money. But that was the moment that I came out of denial. That was the moment. It's like someone threw ice water on me, that I knew I had a problem. And so there was only one thing to do, get rid of the problem. So I got divorced, but I still did not want to deal with money. And then I started getting tax bills for over $1 million. The back taxes my ex didn't pay for illegal deals he got us in. Of course, my signature was on everything that I just signed what he told me to sign. And my ex had left the country. I did not have $1 million, not even close. And my father wouldn't lend me money. And that was the moment. I knew I had to get smart about money. Now, I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know what I was going to do. But I really believe that when you make a commitment, a down-to-your-toes commitment, the universe revolves to help you reach your goal. And at that moment, I was a journalist, and I was writing for the San Francisco Business Times. And someone hired me, a nonprofit firm, hired me to do a freelance project interviewing women who were smart about money. And I want to tell you, those interviews changed my life forever. Because no one explained to me the process of going from ignorant to smart about money. No one ever explained to me. I had no role models. Suddenly, these women were telling me how they did it. And I did it, too. And I not only did it, but I wrote a book about it, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, How Women Get Smart About Money. And that book, which came out 12 years ago, was just revised and updated for a 10-year anniversary. And it was just an amazing feat for me.
And that was interesting. I heard something about when you were first approached to write Six Secrets of Six-Figure Women. You didn't want to do it.
That's the second book. First book was Prince Charming Isn't Coming.
Okay.
That's why I interviewed women who are smart with money. And I learned the process, how you go from being uneducated, ignorant, to understanding money. And it's a process that involves, which I didn't realize until that moment, not only the outer work, which is kind of understanding the difference between a stock and a bond and funding your retirement, blah, blah, blah. But it's very much also a process of doing the inner work, dealing with your attitudes, beliefs, and decisions you've made about yourself and money. I changed significantly. I suddenly was smart about money. I understood it. I started teaching it, traveling the country, selling my book, but I couldn't make money. And I figured, well, I'm a writer. Writers don't make money. And that's when my agent suggested that there are more women making more money than ever before. Why don't I write a book about that? And that's when I hated the idea. Because I imagine these successful women as designer dress snobs on steroids. That's when I did this like little out-of-body thing. And I said, Barbara, if that's how you feel about successful women, how will you ever let yourself become one? So I ended up interviewing 154 women who made anywhere from 100,000 to 7 million. And I want to tell you something. I started making six figures, double what I'd ever made, before I even finished writing the book.
Just from following their advice, their insights.
Just from doing the outer work and the inner work that I learned from them. I didn't change anything I did, but I started making more money. I mean, I was still doing the same work. And then I wanted to see if I could teach others. So I started getting Overcoming Under-Earning workshops. And a few years ago, I went back and I interviewed every woman who went through that workshop. Plus, a lot of them had given the workbook to their friends and to their boyfriends and their husbands. So I interviewed men for that one, too. And my latest book was Overcoming Under-Earning. And I tell you, it has been a remarkable ride.
That is. It's an amazing story. And now, one of the things I want to ask you about, Barbara, is where do our beliefs about money come from? We had the most fascinating interview recently with Rich Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, and his sister, who is a Buddhist nun. And to listen to the two different understandings about money from each of those people, even though they grew up in the same family, was fascinating. And I'm just wondering, what do you think?
What a great interview that must have been.
It's incredible. You know, I'm just curious, from your research, where do our earliest understandings about money?
Well, of course, research has shown us that our behavior with money very much comes from our family of origin, our parents. But also the culture, our teachers, our religions, they all play a part. It's like we come into this world as this little unprogrammed computer, and we become programmed by all the messages that come in. And what happens is, like, we get these messages, and we convert them to beliefs. And from these beliefs, we make a decision. And those decisions are mostly unconscious, very irrational. They have nothing to do with reality. And they were normally made when we were very young. But we are operating on these decisions as if they are law, as if they are solid truth. And that is how we're making our choices today, based on those unconscious decisions. And so the work that I do is to help people become aware of their unconscious attitudes, beliefs, and decisions they made about themselves and money. And many of them work, but many of them don't. I'll give you an example. And then I can give you an exercise for your listeners to do. Would you like that?
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay, so for me, I found myself when I was writing my book, Prince Charming Isn't Coming. Oh, man, I started understanding money. I started really getting it. And I was so excited. And then all of a sudden, I saw myself falling back into old behaviors where I forget to write down my checks that I wrote. I forget to make the calls to the financial advisor. I just started resisting. And I remember going to my therapist. And I said, I really want to get smart about money. I really do. And he said, talk to me like I'm a voice in your head. I said, okay, I really do. I really do. And then he responded as a voice in my head, no, you don't. And I felt like the air came out of my balloon. And I realized there's a part of me that didn't want to become smart. And as I went deeper and deeper into that part of me, I realized that I was afraid that if I became smart about money, a man wouldn't love me. That had been programmed in my head. And once I saw that, and I could make different choices, everything changed. So you want an exercise for you and your listeners?
Yeah.
It's a very quick exercise. So imagine, go back, and if you can't get it right now, do it later. Go back and see if you can retrieve, see if you can remember your very first memory around money. Your very first memory around money. Maybe when you were 3 or 4 or 5 years old. Or maybe when you're 8 or 9, your first memory about money. And then you take that memory and you freeze it like a snapshot. And in that snapshot is loaded with information about a belief and a decision you made about money in that moment. And I'll give you an example. My earliest memory is when I was standing on this little step stool brushing my teeth. So I probably was something like 4 or 5 years old, maybe 3. I don't know. And my mother was standing next to me. I was brushing my teeth and I looked over at her and I asked her how much allowance she got. And she gave me this look, like that was a horrible question to ask. Just the look. And when I dissected that memory, I realized I made a decision. You do not talk about money. So when I was going through all my craziness with my ex-husband, I never told anyone what I was going through. No one. I was in therapy 3 times a week, and I never even talked to my therapist about it.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. You couldn't worry about money and you couldn't talk about it. That pretty much covers it.
I know. I set myself up. So that's the kind of things we want to get to. If you're struggling with money, either making more or managing it wisely, the key is to not only look at the outer work, but to look at the inner work.
So it sounds like the foundation is the inner work. You've got to do that first, right?
If people are struggling to really get a handle on their money, the inner work is usually what's missing. Now, something recently occurred for me when I decided a couple years ago that my new goal was I wanted to make millions, help millions, and give millions. You know, I had the 6 figures down, but I was having trouble. I was making 6 figures, but I couldn't get it up there even close to the million mark. And so I started interviewing women who made millions. And I had a real jolt that there's 3 levels of financial development. There's survival, stability, and affluence. Those are the basic 3. I had been spending my life work taking people from survival to stability and get them really entrenched in stability. But taking women from stability to affluence, taking myself, was a whole different set of principles, especially for women. And that is what I have come to call, like, these women were playing a different game than the world was telling me. In other words, men were playing. And I've come to call this game Sacred Success. And that's the book I'm working on now. I only write about what I need to learn. And whenever I gave Overcoming Under-Earning workshops, I always told everybody, look, I'm here because I'm teaching this because I need to learn it. But as soon as I learn it, I'm out of here. And I have now trained others to lead Overcoming Under-Earning workshops. But I am no longer teaching them. I'm now doing Sacred Success retreats.
That is fascinating in itself, too. But, you know, before you're way too far ahead of a lot of us, let's talk a little bit about, because a lot of people don't even know what we're talking about when we say what's an under-earner. What are the hallmarks of that? What are the characteristics? How do you know if you are one, and what do you do to get out of it?
I defined an under-earner as anyone who makes less than she needs or desires, despite her efforts to do otherwise. It has nothing to do with an amount you make. You can make 6 figures and still be an under-earner. And you can make far less and not be. My daughter, I always use my daughter, my middle daughter as an example. She's a nursery school teacher. She does not make a lot of money, but she's doing what she loves because it feeds her soul. And she makes enough to meet her needs, so she's not in debt. She is not an under-earner. She's a mindful low-earner. Under-earning is never a conscious choice, and it never feeds our soul. It is always a condition of deprivation, and not just of money, but of time, of joy, of choices, of freedom, and most of all, self-esteem.
So working really hard and not seeing results that you need, that kind of thing?
You know, it's interesting. One of the things for me, when I thought of becoming a six-figure woman, my first reaction is, oh, I don't want to work that hard. But the interesting thing I found is that no one works longer hours than under-earners. They're working long, hard, and often more than one job. High earners have figured out how to work less and make more. And one thing I notice is because high earners are very focused. Under earners, one of the ways that we intelligent, capable women sabotage ourselves, and all under earners are self-sabotagers. One of the ways we sabotage ourselves is by becoming very scattered, and very unfocused. I have to tell you, under-earners are probably the most talented people you'll meet because they have so many interests, so many skills, so many things they can do, and they fail to just focus in on one thing.
I see that a lot, even in the folks that we interview, frankly. I'll get so excited about their project, and then when we talk to them 4 months later, they're doing something else, and it's a big disappointment.
Or else they've added things to the mix. They don't give it up. They add things.
They've changed the subject.
Especially for women, there's a huge ambivalence or dislike around money. AARP did a study, I don't know, a couple years ago, and they asked 2,300 adults, would you like to be rich? And 20% of the men and 40-some percent of the women said no. They didn't want to be rich because they thought money was bad, and the people who had it were insensitive and felt superior and greedy. And if that's what you think of successful people, just like I thought of successful women as designer dress snobs, you'll never let yourself become one. So part of overcoming under-earning, which goes against so many of our Christian religious traditions, is learning to love money, to appreciate money, to really enjoy taking care of it for what it can do for you and how it can change the world. And here's where we come to the higher work of wealth. And the higher work of wealth is, I believe, we were all put on this planet for a reason. That God, or whatever you want to call this greater force, has given us a purpose. And it is nearly impossible to focus on our purpose if we're struggling to make ends meet, if we're drowning in debt. So when women come to me and say, oh, no, I don't want to make a lot of money. I say, make a lot of money and then give it away. Because I really believe when enough women get smart about money and become financially successful, we will have the resources, the vision, the values, and the sensitivity to heal this planet and change this world. I think it is our responsibility. It is our privilege. It is an honor to make the most money we can make, managing it wisely, because in order to do that, we have to become more of who we are. And that's the power. You know, that's what I discovered. Women who make a lot of money, high earners, I always ask women, are you doing what you're doing for the money? And 99% of them say, no, I'm not doing this for the money. I'm doing it for the passion, for the recognition, for the challenge. But at the same time, virtually every one of them said to me, but I damn well want to be well compensated because I know I'm worth it.
So they're very sure about their purpose.
They're sure about their purpose, but even more, they really understand their worth. And this is their self-worth. Because I think the thing that keeps us women from making more money is that we devalue ourselves. We will give our time, our knowledge, our skills away for free or bargain prices because we don't believe we're worth more. It's like there's a little voice in our head that says, who do you think you are? Mine used to say, you don't have what it takes. You don't have what it takes. And we believe those voices. And so part of what happened that I learned from my interviews of women who went through my Overcoming Under-Earning workshop was that for those who became high earners, at some point, whether it was during the workshop or afterwards, they all had what I call the click. And the click goes like this. They told me suddenly something clicked inside them that they realized they deserved earn more for no other reason than they're worth it. And when you get that click, that sense of self-worth, there's a strong correlation between your self-worth and your net worth.
So what are some of the other things that under-earners have to do?
Okay, I have five steps, and I can go through those real quick. And they're very, very powerful, and they're not at all what I expected before I began my research. The first step is the most critical. You have to tell the truth. You have to tell the truth about what's not working. You have to tell the truth about what's not working without shame, blame, or judgment. Because every problem that comes in our path has a purpose. It is there to take us higher, but we have to look it square in the face. And what I noticed from my interviews with high earners is that every financial achievement was preceded by a financial challenge. And what most of us want to do is we want to sweep it under the rug. Oh, I don't want to look at how much debt I'm in. Oh, no, no, I don't want to have to deal with this. And a problem could be anything as subtle as, you know, I'm not happy, to, oh, my God, I can't pay the rent again this month. So that's the first step. And in my book, I also have exercises to look not only at the problems out there, but your attitudes, beliefs, and decisions you made early on about money. Those are also holding you back. So just tell the truth. That's the first step. The second step is make a decision. I noticed in every woman's story who was a high earner, there was some moment when she said, with total commitment, it's time to make more money. And this was not just a desire. This was a committed decision. Because what happens because of our ambivalence about money, so many women, is that we haven't made the decision to make money. We haven't adopted a profit motive. And that's what every woman has. They had a profit motive. They liked money. They loved money. They wanted to earn money. It was important for them. Because there's only two games to play. There's the high earner game and the under earner game. And the under earner game goes like this. It's called not to lose. And the way you play the under-earning game is by looking good, by staying safe, by being comfortable, and not losing. And that is driven by a comfort motive. Higher-earning women, their game was playing to win. And playing to win sounds like this. You go as far as you can with all that you got, and when you fall down, you get right back up and you keep going. And that's what a profit motive looks like. And the number one requirement for going to the next level in earnings is being willing to do what's not comfortable to do, which brings me to the third step, and that's what I call the stretch. Every single high earner I've ever interviewed came to a point, not only once, but many times, where she said, oh, no, I can't do this. Oh, no, 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 no way, no how. And she did it anyway. And she didn't always succeed, but she always got back up and kept going. This is the stretch. This is leaving what feels comfortable to what seems impossible. Because I don't care anything, whether you're losing weight or making more money, success always lies just outside your comfort zone. So one of the things I learned from these high earners is that these women, they struggled with fear. They struggled with self-doubt. They struggled with this imposter syndrome, feeling like a fraud and afraid others would find out. Well, me too. But the difference between them and me is they didn't let it stop them. They looked for opportunities to stretch. I developed a motto for me, which I call the high earner motto. Whenever an opportunity came, if it's not illegal or immoral, you just say yes. And then the fourth step is you need to surround yourself with support. Because we women are so relationship-oriented. And under-earners tend to operate in isolation, or they tend to surround themselves with other under-earners, with negative people, with worrywarts, with naysayers. And I saw in interviewing under-earners that became high-earners that it was crucial that they started hanging around with people that were playing the game they wanted to play. Because we become who we're with. So it's critical that we start shifting and we start drawing in support where once there were naysayers. And the final step is you have to respect and appreciate money by taking care of it. And there's four rules for respecting and appreciating money. Because just because you have money doesn't mean you'll keep it. And that's what I learned from high earners. Many of them were not wealthy. Many more than I expected. Because if you have money, doesn't mean you'll keep it. But the ones that had the highest net worth were the ones that followed the four rules of money in this order. They spent less, saved more, invested wisely, and gave generously. And it had to be in that order. Because we women, we got the giving generously down pat. But giving generously without spending less, saving more, and investing wisely is always an act of self-sabotage. Because not only do we jeopardize our own future security, but we diminish the impact that we can make with our money. And that, as I said earlier, is the reason that we want to be smart and financially successful with money. That's the reason. It's not just having money. It's what we can do with our money to make a difference in the world.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. And it's pretty straightforward. I mean, those steps are pretty clear.
There are 5 steps. They're very clear. They're very simple. And they're very challenging. Telling the truth is scary. Making a commitment is scary. Stretching, doing what you don't want to do, I'm here to tell you, I do it every day. I always look for ways to scare myself. And it's scary, but I've learned to see that when I get scared, my first reaction is panic. Then my second reaction is to say, oh, goody, that means I'm going to the next level. And for many women, it's scary to get support. So if I had to leave you with one secret, with one mandate for overcoming under-earning, it's the willingness to do what you don't want to do. It's the willingness to do what scares you.
A lot of that is practice, right?
Yes. It is a practice and it's a consciousness. Because most of us, when we get scared, we feel like, and our brain says, stop, don't do this. We think we shouldn't because it's dangerous. But our brain is not our friend. Our brain's whole purpose is to keep us safe. And this was good when we were a kid. But successful people don't play it safe. They play it big. Successful people aren't afraid to fall down. They just dust themselves up and get back up. And that's what's required. But when you have support, it's a whole lot easier and a whole lot more fun. So it is practice, but it's also a mind training maneuver. It's a consciousness awareness that those inner voices that are telling you to stop are not the truth. I had a woman in one of my workshops when I had people go around and say what their goals were for the workshop. She raised her hand and she goes, mine is to make Blanche shut up. And I said, Blanche? And she said, yeah, that's the voice in my head that tells me how stupid I am. And this woman in the back of the room raised her hand and she goes, oh, mine's Sister Mary Margaret. That was the nun who told me I would never amount to anything. And I said to them, we all have voices in our head that tell us how stupid we are. Mine would tell me you don't have what it takes. You just say, thank you for sharing, and you do it anyway. And eventually those voices will quiet down, but they may never disappear.
What were some of the secrets of six-figure women that you found out?
Well, one of the big ones, see, I always said, I'm a writer, and writers don't make money. So when I started interviewing six-figure women, of the first 15 women I interviewed, 3 of them were writers. And it was like, oh my God, there goes my excuse. And what I found is that it didn't make any difference what field they were in, what job they had, what industry, or what the economy was doing. That had nothing to do with hiring. I interviewed a woman in radio. I interviewed lots of writers. I interviewed a psychic. I interviewed a matchmaker. I don't remember even all the ones I interviewed. I interviewed the head of a nonprofit. These women were all making 6 figures. And that's when I saw and I realized the inner work was as important as the outer work. Another thing I learned that the secret is these women had the guts, had the chutzpah to speak up and to ask for what they want and to say no for what they did. And this was a crucial, crucial secret. And the things they would ask for would be ridiculously unreasonable. And these women were totally unreasonable. And they maybe didn't get everything they wanted, but they got a lot closer than if they hadn't.
So, Barbara, your new venture is Sacred Success and
yes.
How to create affluence in a way that is meaningful and beneficial to others by doing what you were put on this earth to do.
That's right.
And it's your personal journey, it sounds like, from going from 6 figures to millions.
I will tell you, I have never had such a windfall of money coming to me in my life as I had this year from so many sources. I just keep saying to people, this stuff works. It works. Now, do you want to talk a little bit about Sacred Success?
I do.
So the important thing is, in order to play this game I call Sacred Success, you must have a few traits strongly in place. And one is, you have to have a profit motive. In order to overcome under-earning, you have to really build up those profit motive muscles. So you have to have a profit motive firmly in place. Second, you really have to have an understanding of your value. Even if it comes and goes, you have to have glimpsed, have to have gotten that sense that you have something to value in the world. And you have to be willing to be uncomfortable. You have to really understand that that's how the game is played. That's a given, that being scared is a good thing. Okay? So those three in place, there's what I discovered, and this is what kind of kept me from moving forward for a couple of years. What I saw is what I realized there was a paradox, what I call the paradox of secret success, that these women who were making millions had a strong profit motive, but then they had to give up the profit motive because profit is not the goal of sacred success. It is an expected byproduct. But the goal of sacred success is achieving greatness. And greatness is doing what you were put on this planet to do and helping others do the same. See, what I realized is that in order to go from stability to affluence, men are very motivated by profits, by perks, by prestige. You tell a man you'll get more money, that'll get him going, by and large. Women, once we reach financial stability, we're not motivated by money. Not at all. What motivates us is the opportunity to help others. And that's what sacred success is all about.
So with that first one, though, for sacred success, you talk about building a strong profit motive.
You have to start the game with a profit motive firmly integrated into your thinking. It's like, yeah, I'm not giving my time and skills away unless I decide to do something pro bono.
So are you talking business plan there, kind of?
I'm talking about a mindset. I'm talking about a mindset. You talk about to an under-earner about charging what they're worth or raising their prices, they'll freak out. You talk to a high-earner, and they keep raising their prices until people stop paying. And then when they get comfortable with that, they raise the prices more. Because it comes from a sense of valuing themselves, not out of greed, not out of materialism necessarily. It's a sense of your value. A woman who's ready to play sacred success will not undermine herself because she values herself. And that's why the work of overcoming under-earning is so important. It's such an important predecessor.
You're talking about much more than a business plan here.
See, whatever is going on with money is going on with other areas of your life too. I guarantee it. Because you cannot slice up your life like a pizza and say, okay, I'm going to work on money here. Because whatever's going on with money is going to show up in other areas of your life. I feel like money is like a doorway to your power. Because that's what this is about. This is not about money. It is about owning your power. What trips women up is not money. It's not making it or managing it. They're perfectly capable. It's their fear of owning their power. And there are several doorways you can walk through to really claim and step into your power. Money's one, health is one, relationships is one, career is one, all kinds of ways that demand you to lift heavier weights, to become more of who you are, to become a powerful woman in this world.
Well, Barbara, this is just fantastic information about money. Where can people find out more about you and what you're up to?
My website, Barbara Stanny, S-T-A-N-N-Y, BarbaraStanny.com. Okay, I really appreciate this. It's been fun talking to you.
That's the interview with Barbara Stanny. I hope you found it helpful. For more great interviews on making money, health, advertising, and marketing, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.